Guardians taking on the Tigers, looking for a win. They're looking to bring on this guy. He's a master of baseball, a master of the Guardians. Zach Meisel, the master from The Athletic, joins us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hello, Zach.
God, what a way to start the day, to hear your guys' voices.
We going to win today? Excuse me. You are a Big J journalist. Are the Guardians going to win today? Ah.
I'm going to say yes.
Whoa! Oh, all right! Yes! All right! Here we are. Okay, thanks for the interview.
I think they win in four. How about that?
Whoa! Zach Meisel hanging him over the fence. Tell me why.
Well, I just wanted you guys to have a nice catchy headline to put with the segment. No, I think they've looked like the better team. I think the bats will get going a little bit, and I think this is a little more difficult for Detroit to piece together 18 innings. You know, this is the only time during the series where you don't have an off day between games, and I think the Guardians will have a short leash with Alex Cobb, but I just it sounds crazy. Like, I still like Cleveland's lineup better than I like Detroit's lineup, and I think that'll matter here. I think the Guardians will score some runs today, and I think that puts the pressure on the Tigers, and then in a situation tomorrow where you presumably have Tanner Bibee on the mound and the Tigers are trying to scrap together nine more innings out of a bullpen that's going to get used a lot today. I don't know. The other thing is, like, you kind of have to win in four. Not to say you can't win a game that Scooble pitches in, but you don't want to get to that scenario if you don't have to.
Zach Meisel with us right now on the hotline. What do you think of the job that your rookie manager has done through the first two games of the series?
I think it's been pretty good. I would have had the bullpen going a little earlier. I was surprised Matthew Boyd even got, 4 2/3 innings. But it worked out. And I think you've seen the script. You've seen the formula. It's Emmanuel Clase doesn't hang a slider. It's maybe the script worked perfectly twice in a row. So it's everything we thought it would be. It's going to be leaning on the bullpen, especially those four guys that have carried them all season. You just got to get some timely hits. And, you know, I think it's going to be especially interesting to see the lineup here, knowing that Detroit's going to have to mix and match their way through nine innings. You know, who's going to be the player who steps up? Is it David Fry? Is it Lane Thomas? Is it Kyle Manzardo? Is it just one of those non-stars who you need to put in the right positions to succeed? And especially if Detroit's going to go, you know, switching back and forth between lefties and righties and whatnot. I think that lineup construction and the decision-making of when to pinch hit, who to hit where, that's going to be critical the next 2 days.
Do we have any reasons? Everyone's throwing out, he threw three sliders in a row and one of them didn't do exactly what it was supposed to. How Class A goes from being so darn dominant all year. Was it a different approach? Was it the pressure getting to him? Should he have walked the guy in that situation? What did you think?
I think there are a lot of excuses you can make for him or explanations you can try to or conclusions you can try to draw. And the bottom line, and he said this, is he just didn't have good command. And whatever the reason is for that, you know, he's overamped or it's just one of those days. Like, some pitchers go through that, even the best in the world. And I think he just made a mistake. Sometimes it just happens. Like, it's not because he pitched Saturday in a 7-run game. Like, then he would have had 10 days off in between outings, and you didn't know for sure you were going to need him in game two. Like, it was good for him to pitch in game one. It's not because, you know, he came in the eighth inning. Like, he's done that before. Cade Smith pitched in parts of three different innings in game two. Like, we don't need to make excuses here. He just didn't have his best stuff, and he missed with a pitch. That slider was supposed to be in the dirt. It was supposed to be trying to get him to swing and miss. And I think there was a little bit of trepidation about with a runner on third, and Carpenter's a really good hitter. He's excellent against righties. But not wanting to throw a cutter without your best command, and it results in, you know, we had seen like a bloop single or a broken bat type deal that scores that run. So he was looking for the swing and miss. and he just did not put that pitch where it needed to be.
Zach Meisel joining us from The Athletic. Who is the pressure on? Who is the pressure on here?
I think it's on Cleveland, but I think it depends on what you're looking at. Like, the pressure's on Cleveland because the Tigers, no one expected them to get to this point. So the pressure's always going to be on the Guardians in this series. The Tigers are playing with house money. Their fans are going to come to this game today thinking, October 9th, like, we had booked a family vacation for this back in July. So the Tigers are in a good spot here. But I both of these teams, I think, understand, you know, you look around baseball right now, like, this thing is wide open. Like the Mets are the closest team to a World Series right now. And no one expected. Like, I thought they were eliminated like two different times last week. So it's wide open. And I think instead of pressure, I think it just fuels these teams to see, like, oh my gosh, like, you know, the Yankees could be on the brink tonight or tomorrow. And next thing you know, it's like you're playing the Royals maybe for a chance to go to the World Series. Like, I think all these teams kind of realize, like, it's right there for the taking. Like, crazier things have happened than the Tigers getting the World Series this year or the Guardians getting the World Series this year. So I think there's pressure on the Guardians just from the standpoint of they're probably supposed to win this series. But I think it's more just looking at the scene here and realizing that, like, if you play well, if you do what you're supposed to do, you know, a lot can happen.
Would you expect a situation in a tight game once again, especially if you are maybe up a run where Class A is going to be asked to get more than just three outs?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, if Carpenter hits that to the wall instead of over the wall, no one's talking about Class A not looking like himself and not having good command. Right. So, to me, the issue was, how are you letting Jake Rogers and Trey Sweeney at the bottom of Detroit's order get on base against you? Like, it's Emmanuel Class A. Like, you had one of the best relief seasons of all time. So that's the bigger issue, is letting those guys that he should just overpower get on base. And, you know, they're going to stand by him and say that it was just an off night that happens to people, and you got to get back out there. I mean, no matter what happened in game two, like, if your options are Emmanuel Class A and Eli Morgan because your other top relievers have pitched, you're going to go with Class A for that extra out if you need it. So I think they're fully prepared for him to, you know, you never know what the situation is going to be, but for him, and he's so efficient, he can certainly go multiple innings. So I don't think they would hesitate.
Zach Meisel joining us here on the show. Did you, what is something that you think that Stephen Vogt can correct here over this next game? And I would say next two games here in this series.
I don't know about correct. I mean, they need more than three hits. They got to score some runs. How advantageous was it? Just think about how much calmer you felt watching game one because they got out to an early lead. I know they're not going to score five runs in the first inning every night, but just a couple runs to support that bullpen as they take the ball from whoever's starting is such a difference maker. You know, think about the tension you felt watching inning after inning, and Noel makes the throw to possibly save a run later in that inning, and Kwan makes the diving catch, I think, to save potentially a run. So it's just like you're living and dying on every pitch, and if the offense can just scratch across a couple early runs, that makes such a difference. And we've seen it, like, Class A aside, I mean, Cade Smith was incredible again in game two. Tim Herron and Hunter Gaddis did their job. So I think if you're Stephen Vogt, you're not, and you've heard him say this, like, he's not going to abandon ship just because one guy maybe didn't have his best stuff.
Would you have pinched hit for John Kenzie Noel in the eighth?
That was to lead off the inning, right?
Yeah.
I actually had this debate with Jason Lloyd. I feel like if it was two outs, I'd probably let Noel hit for sure because it's just one swing of the bat. To lead off an inning, like, you'd be fine with a Brendan. Like, the options there are probably Noel, home run, or strikeout. And with Brennan, it's, you know, it's basically everything but those. So
okay, yeah.
I guess it makes – I understand it leading off an inning with two outs. I would have just let Noel hit.
So if it were to just end where he was maybe at the back end of the inning, then it wouldn't have been a problem that he would have been still hitting?
Yeah, because at that point, like, you're probably not piecing together a rally. So just let me take the risk that, you know, on the 7% chance Noel runs into one and hits it over the fence. That makes sense there. But, you know, the odds are he's not going to do that. And starting an inning, you're, you know, you don't want to start with one out.
Do you think the game four starter for the Guardians will be impacted at all with who wins today?
No, Vogt wouldn't tip his hand, actually, yesterday. He said
he'd
have an answer for us.
We play it. They said they haven't even thought about game four.
Nope, not even thinking about it. Boom.
Yeah, I don't really understand why it wouldn't be Tanner Bibee. The only thing would be, like, if they wanted to start an opener, and that would only be because Bibee has pitched against them, what, now five times this season? And go look at Bibee threw, like, 13 sinkers in game one. He doesn't throw a sinker. He threw, like, a handful all season. But he had to unleash something new against the Tigers because they've seen him so much. So I understand if there's a little hesitation just because it's like, oh, my God, this is going to be the sixth time they've seen him. And, you know, there's no surprises anymore. So maybe they want, like, I don't know, a lefty to start in the first inning and then bring Bibee out of the bullpen. But, like, he's never done that before, and that might be getting too cute. So I would think it's Tanner Bibee. We'll know for sure at, I think, like 12:45.
Zach Meisel joining us on the show. What were your thoughts on Terry Francona taking the managing job over with the Cincinnati Reds?
Yeah, not surprised that he's back in the game. A little surprised at the destination and the timing. I knew he didn't want the headache of the big market with the expensive players and the team that anything short of a World Series is a failure. But I'm surprised by this. I don't know. Cincinnati, it seems like an odd fit. It makes sense. Like, they have a young team. Like, they could be a solid team next season. I just kind of figured he'd go to, like, I don't know, like Atlanta maybe, if their manager retires in the next year or two, because that's been a conversation. Or he'd wait for, like, the A's to move to Vegas and manage them in a few years if they were ready to finally spend money. But, yeah, it was interesting. Like, listening to that press conference, I felt like I could recite the entire thing because it was all those same things we heard for 11 years. And then it makes you realize he was here a really long time. And you don't typically see that, not just in baseball, but in sports. I mean, you don't see coaches last somewhere for longer than a decade. So not surprised that by the middle of the summer he felt that itch again to get back in. But I certainly would not have guessed that it would be the Reds in the first week of October.
Zach, you are a wonderful man, and we thank you very much for the time. All the very best to you, all the very best to yours, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Ken, I know you've been beaten over the head with this, but just think.
What?
You could be saying your famous phrase in like 2 days.
I'm not saying it. Somebody else will say it. Well, they'll play it enough that people will think I'm saying it. I'm not going to say it, Zach.
It's waffle doodle time?
No. You know what he thinks I'm going to say. I ain't going to say it. It ain't happening. It ain't coming out of my mouth. No. What do you say to that, Zach?
We'll see. You're going to feel the pressure. You're going to want to do it.
Yeah, I will see you in hell before I actually say it. Zach, thank you for the time.
See you there. Love you, boys. Bye.
Yeah, imagine, we love you, too.
Thank Naylor you. Back in the Bronx.
That's fine. I ain't saying it. They've played the Yankees since that series. I'm not saying that.
Playoff game, a little different.
No, I learned my lesson. I'm going to have enough on my plate with old Goofball in there and his fake fandom. So I don't need to sit there and say those words, which I'm not going to say, which Owen is waiting for me to say so he can record it and play it and tell everybody I said it.
I don't need to
worry. I already have the clip.
I'm just going to have it.
Give me the Yankees. Yeah, turn my mic back on. Give me the Yankees. No. It was one of the dumber things I've said on The Fan. And you think about the territory that brings in.
You've said a lot of dumb things on The Fan.
I've said a lot of smart things, too, but nobody actually wants to pay attention to those.
You just said dumb things.
Name 8 dumb things I've said on The Fan. Give me the Yankees. That's 1 through 7. The other
Give
one
me
was
the Knicks.
The other one, the other one was that they were going to take Sam Darnold. And it took Baker Mayfield. Of course, that was I was used as a pawn in that plan to get the leaks out of the building. Yep.
Guys, do you want Ken to guarantee a win for the Cleveland Browns?
You, Ken, need to hear it right now.
Five-year-old. Let's go.
I guarantee a win. I guarantee they're going to beat the Raiders.
I guarantee. I could keep going.
I'm not guaranteeing a victory. I'm just saying that I'm not going to say bring on the you-know-whos. Ain't going to happen. That's all. I would go with Matt Boyd. I would go with Tanner Bibee tomorrow. Win or lose. And then, if they lose, you go with go with Tanner Bibee tomorrow. What am I saying?
I'm in agreement with Zach.
Win or lose, Tanner Bibee. And then I'm going to go with Matt Boyd and play the odds. But he says we're going to win in 4. So it's looking very, very, very good for today.